Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're just going to get going. We're going to fire into this, right? We've got about 800 rugby games to try and talk about in some level of mild, not depth, but like somewhere akin to that.
Sure.
Which we've done on previous games. We're probably not going to have that level here. Should we start with bloody Scotland-Romania?
Sure. That was, weirdly, for a game that was such a blowout or so one-sided, I kind of enjoyed
it. It was fun, wasn't
it? As a piece of Saturday night entertainment.
That's the thing. Scotland are just fun to watch. I just enjoy watching them do their thing.
Yeah.
Ben Healy, I thought, was fantastic.
Yeah.
But you probably can't read too much into the game like this. We've talked in past about what a shame this is with Romania. This was a serious Romanian team who were very good 18 months ago, even a year ago. But then things have just fallen apart and have now just become a laughingstock, and it's such a shame.
Yeah.
You can put a lot of blame on Eugene Knapdrock, the coach, but I think actually it's got to go on the administration.
I don't think it's blame on him.
Yeah, I think he's been given an incredibly difficult situation and not done particularly well with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think all of it should be going the Romania Rugby Federation. We've had in the last few days, like the Mia McAvey, the former captain who's just retired, in his retirement speech, he was quite scathing of the union. We've seen Soren Sokol, the captain for the 2007 World Cup,
legend,
came out and he gave a three-hour interview in which he talked in some depth about his problems with the union, how they have in past tried to, when players have signed contracts overseas, tried to take cuts of it. You know, they tried to get 10% of Telegon Teniek's contract in the Pro Data.
That's insane.
Which is ridiculous. Telegon Teniek apparently reportedly almost walked because of his hatred of the union and all of this right before the World Cup. He's arguably their best player. Play the game in South Africa.
Most promising player for sure.
Yeah.
He's the best young player. He's the player that can least afford to just lose outright.
Yeah. And he went. They lost Attila Septar as well, who's a French and 20s player. Played in that French and 20s
team.
He's with Roman Tamak and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good player. Played in the top 14 a whole bunch. And he walked right before the World Cup because of disagreements with the union and so on. And he didn't want to be representing those people. There's all sorts going on behind the scenes, and I really hope they can start to sort it out.
Yeah.
Because Andy Robinson was doing an incredible job of papering over the cracks there, and there's a lot of worries that we start to have former players and current players talking out against the administration.
Yeah.
And I wonder how long until we see players that are in this squad right now starting to do that.
Telegon
Teniek is probably the one to keep an eye on as one of the highest profile players. Obviously, his dad played to Romania. We talked about this in past before, and is a standout there who can be, you know, playing for other. Will be playing pro rugby and will be one of the highest profile players, and also is qualified South Africa and France. And it's a long shot for him to play for them, but he said it's possible. He's apparently planning to walk away from the national team after this game and basically wanted to stay to play against South Africa.
One awful thought that is, isn't it? And Romania qualified for this World Cup as such a worthy team.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they qualified in the last spot and are just there to make up the numbers. They qualified really worthy of being here.
People are pulling out the Spain thing of Spain being disqualified as why they qualified.
Yeah.
They would have won the repechage, that Romania team, last year. And Andy Robinson might have stayed because it would have left a kind of feel-good feeling rather than them having a series of games to build towards the World Cup, which they lost against far more ambitious opponents than they were getting a few years earlier.
As I say, they qualified as a really worthy team of being here, and I worry they might not leave as such.
You know?
Obviously, they've got Tonga coming up, and I just hope we have at least a similar game to Namibia-Uruguay that we spoke about before, where it's we see the best version of them. We see what these players are capable of, even though, you know, as you say, like, I'm not blaming Eugene Upshock remotely for not being up to this standard or not being used to this standard, not being acclimatised to it, because I think that is very much the issue here. And like, their discipline has been rubbish, was very, very poor in the Scotland game.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who had money on them to get three or more yellow cards, fair play to you. But yeah, it's really disappointing. Not a great look for Romania generally.
Yeah. Scotland, on the other hand, a lot of fun. Real entertaining game. I changed Darcy Graham. I was going back and forth between him and Nwangi Tanase as my triple captain. And I went for Nwangi Tanase for reasons I don't understand.
Yeah.
And that was a hell of a mistake because he was one of the most valuable any player has been at all.
Yeah. So he scored just the four tries.
Just the four tries. And like two assists as well.
I think so.
And about a billion metres.
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
it was billed as a straight shootout between him and Carl Steyn for who gets the wing spot against Ireland. And both brilliant. Like, Carl Steyn had an amazing Six Nations. Like, didn't score a try in this game, but was really, really solid. I think defensively, he's outstanding and great in the air, Kyle Steyn. I think he's a really seriously underrated player. But, like, you can't not pick Darcy Graham. And they haven't not picked Darcy Graham off the back of that, because he is just box office. And so I watched this with our mother, who compared him to Dash from The Incredibles, which is an incredible comparison.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on.
People seem to enjoy that on Twitter the other day. But, just so much fun to watch. The tries he scored were just fantastic. You mentioned Ben Healy earlier. I think we should give him a bit of spotlight here, because he kicked the conversion of 13 of Scotland's 14 tries. The other one was kicked by George Horn for no reason.
Which I loved. I loved him just taking that, to sneak that.
Yeah, so he's listed as points at the end of his career rather than tries scored for Scotland. You know, fair play to you, George Horn. I'm a big fan of him. And, you know, when he came on, he was a lot of fun as well. You knew it wasn't going to exactly slow the pace of the game down. But Ben Healy, I think, was excellent. I think he had a bit of a shaky first 15 minutes, but, like, he sorted it out by kicking really well and then by attacking really well. Mm. And he did that thing we've praised Teddy Teller for, and George Ford and so on. It's just that against a very wavering Romanian defence, he knew exactly what shape to call the whole time.
Yeah.
And he had no mercy for them with it. And I think if you're trying to get in the team for Finn Russell, or at least get onto the bench, that is exactly what you have to do.
Yeah.
And I think he was excellent for that. And look, he wasn't the most challenged by Romania in D, especially in the second half, when literally they were just scoring tries at will.
Yeah.
But I think he was brilliant.
Yeah. No, and just a great lot of fun. The Scottish pack as well, I thought, looked solid, really solid.
Yeah, great to see Matt Ferguson back playing really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's been some heroic things coming out about Matt Ferguson, and we'll see how we go. Yeah, it was good to see him back. Should we move on, but stay in that pool?
Okay.
South Africa, Tonga.
Yes. What a weird game this one was.
What a weird game I was sort of half paying attention to. It felt like a game that was on in the background, I think, a great deal.
Okay. There will be games we'll discuss today that I was half paying attention to.
Yeah, like, I was watching it, you know, but, like... So I ordered the pizza to arrive right at the start of this game.
Yeah.
And the pizza arrived right at the start of this game, right before the anthems. Thought I timed it absolutely perfectly. Opened the box, they sent me the wrong pizza.
Oh, no way.
And
what did they send you?
They sent me a 4-cheese pizza, which was, like, mostly goat cheese. Which makes me gag. I am not a fan of goat cheese at all.
Yeah.
So I was sent, this horrible goat cheese pizza. And I spent a lot of the game, like, wondering what I do about this. In the end, I managed to get it refunded. I got the credit back on Deliveroo, so I'm not going to complain. So, c'est bon. And whether I, you know, order another... It was a whole thing. That was taking as much of my attention in the first half as the rugby itself was. So I may not have the most detailed takes. But sure. South Africa, good rugby team.
Yeah, I mean, they played all right, is the thing. Yeah. Like, I was going to say they played very well. To be honest, I came away from that game thinking South Africa played quite poorly by their standards.
Yeah.
They obviously, you know, came away with 49 points, you know, and a massive win. But I don't know. People kind of will know at this point that I don't rate this Tonga team very highly. And the fact that they were in the game at all makes you think, like, oh, South Africa weren't really up to much.
I thought this was Tonga's best performance.
By some distance, frankly.
Not just of the World Cup. I think this is the best performance.
Of the Toto Kefu era.
I think, this is arguably the best performance I've had in Toto Kefu. By some distance, actually.
Yeah.
I thought Tonga actually fronted up physically incredibly well. I thought they really saw the threat coming to them, you know, which was that Springbok pack, that huge pack that they still sent out, even though it wasn't their first choice pack.
Yeah.
You still had bloody, you know, Kalisi and Etzebeth are playing. So obviously that's a statement.
Yeah.
Tonga scrums really well. I think a guy who's kind of become a meme, he's become a bit of a joke, is Ben Tamathina.
I was just about to bring him
up. But he has been Tonga's best player.
He's been outstanding.
He's been
monumental in that game.
Yeah.
Also, just like going to the rugby club a couple of days after that, the amount of people came up to me and was like, how good is the Tonga captain, by the way? And because he was exceptional.
Yeah.
And he played like, what, 65 odd minutes, which is more than he would like usually.
Yes.
But like the amount of weight that guy carries round and carries round effectively is incredible. Like he took his try brilliantly.
Yeah. Great finish on it, which is, it feels like faint praise when he's flopping over from 1 meter, but like that's a great finish.
Yeah,
that is well taken, positioning himself, managing to get between the defenders and managing to go straight to ground, like the way he just plops down.
Yeah,
really, really effective, really good, using his weight incredibly well. Like he understands his size in a way that a lot of players his size don't. He's fantastic.
There's, I can't remember who it was that was telling me about, there was the legend of some NFL player where essentially the thing about him was, if you want to make 10 metres, he's exactly the guy for you. If you want to make 11 metres, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, Ben Tamafuna from 3 metres is absolutely lethal. Like, if you're on the 5-metre line, you know, you're fucked. Like, you think of something else, have a different plan. But if you have 3 metres to go, Ben Tamafuna's the guy. And he was just brilliant.
I just think he's been monumental for Tonga, and he's made this team more than they perhaps would be otherwise.
Yeah.
Because you look at that team, I said it before the tournament, but they're set up to score consolation tries, and we saw that perfectly this day.
And against Scotland.
Well. Yeah. And Ben Tamafuna made them slightly more than that, I think.
Yes.
He made them hang in the game and feel like they're in the game for longer than they would have been otherwise.
Yes. Like, Fini Anisi's try was nice.
Yeah.
You know, the nice long ball over the top. That was very nice. I think Tai Takalua made a good impact off the bench when he came on. Before we talk about Springboks, we do need to talk about Springboks. Let's just quickly talk Pat Pellegrini.
Mate.
The pride of Coventry.
So this was the thing. It was something that was talked about when the Tonga squad was named, was that they'd named an uncapped Coventry fly half who'd never played at a level higher than that.
Who was half Italian.
Yeah, in their squad. And everyone was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Sorry, there's an Italian from Coventry playing for Tonga. What is going on here? And it was generally a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
And then he played in the PNC. You're like, brilliant, this guy plays for Tonga. You know, I remember us watching one of the PNC games back because they were like 2 a.m. kickoffs, and we watched one back in the office like on the Monday morning. And watching it and going like, yeah, okay, like I know Tuas Over's running over the top of someone, but it's a fly half from Coventry.
Yeah.
Like, that's nothing. That's
who
fine.
Was playing for Sevenoaks beforehand and then got signed up by Coventry last year, which absolutely reeks of Thibaut Flamont playing for Derby University's third team or whatever it
Derby
was.
Derby University's third team.
Yeah, yeah, Derby University's third team at fullback.
Sorry, of course he did.
How
yeah.
the story went.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's always one of these at a World Cup.
Yeah.
There's always a story like this that is just randomly brought up constantly. And it's one of my favourite things that these happen. Still,
hey, he
to
was
this
a bricklayer
day.
3 months ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shit like that. I love it. I love it. And Pat Pellegrini, what a try.
Yeah, phenomenal. And look, you can call it a lucky bounce. I don't give a shit. That was
deliberate. Matter.
He knew what he was doing.
And also, like, how lucky does a bounce have to be when you're English 2nd/3rd division fly half and you're playing against the fucking Springboks? How lucky does a bounce
Springboks.
Have to be for you to both kick the ball, catch it and score yourself? How good does that kick have to be?
Like,
you know?
Khaleesi and Etzebeth were playing.
Yeah,
two of the all-time greats.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely, precisely. And look, sure, like, Salesi Pietel's chasing, it was quite nice, blah, blah, blah. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's all on Pat Pellegrini. No one cares about Pietel.
We should talk fly half, though. There is one interesting talking point in the Springbok team, which is, of course, Andre Pollard back in at fly half. I think he looked fine.
Yeah.
I think he did his job. He looked like Andre Pollard.
He looked like Andre Pollard. He didn't have to look like anything better.
He didn't look like anything else. He didn't look like a player that's set up to, you know, score 20 tries past you. He looked like a player who is crucial in knockout rugby.
Yeah, exactly. A player who can kick the ball really high into the air, can kick his goals and randomly crash it in every now and then.
Yeah, defends incredibly well.
Exactly what Andre Pollard is.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It doesn't sound that appealing, but it did win a World Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
And a Lions tour.
Right. You have that interview with Razzy a few years ago where he talked about, and I think I brought this up in a previous episode, it might be the one that we never managed to put out, but where he talked about, he was asked, you know, if you could have any player in the world, who would you want? He said Ellis Genge, and then he wouldn't bite on anyone else. It's just a Finn Russell. He was like, no, I want to win test matches. I'd pick Andre Pollard rather than Finn Russell.
And here's the thing, I would say Finn Russell is undoubtedly a better fly half than Andre Pollard, but I get it. He's not what the Springboks want. Springboks want Andre Pollard.
And they've got him.
And that's,
And honestly,
that's why they called him up for a hooker.
After the Scotland game, we were saying, oh, well, maybe you do stick with Lubbock and you do try and do this with Andre Pollard as a safety blanket when he's inevitably called up. And I don't think you do.
That's the thing. Now we've seen it. It's kind of like, oh, no, but they could just play Pollard for the full thing.
He looked up to speed. He looked good enough to play at this level.
He was
fine.
Fit, you know.
Yeah, he didn't. Obviously, he only played 50-odd minutes, but that I don't think is too big an issue. If he can only play 50-odd minutes, that's better than him only playing 10 minutes at the end.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
Look, Marnie Lubbock can rip it up for 30 minutes. We know that.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And it will be against France, most likely, who love to open things up in the second half.
Yeah.
And that might be perfect. That might fall perfectly. If they can keep it tight, if they can get a narrow lead, and then maybe Le Bock works later on when France start to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Also depends how DuPont's around, you know?
Yeah.
You want to be targeting him. And actually, maybe being more direct in the way Pollard demands you are, whereas Le Bock, you can try and be direct, but there's still going to be a bit of wiggle around.
Yes, absolutely.
Naturally, because it's just, you know,
he's more of a kind of baller type 10.
Yeah, but you've got to play a little bit to the 10's game plan, no matter what your approach is.
Yes.
You know, no matter how you want to play, it's always going to be come through the accent of the fly half, you know, and whatever you're saying.
Pollard is like the epitome of this Springbok team as a back, you know?
Yeah. And again, he was unbelievable in all three knockout games.
Yeah,
last time round.
Yeah,
that carries more weight than having
no
a good
evidence
game
to say that he wouldn't be.
Yeah,
again,
but that carries more weight to me than being good against Scotland in a poor game. Yeah,
and or being like a sensational at club level as
exactly
on. Like
yeah,
play well in the rugby championship and stuff.
For me, I would put Pollard straight back in the 10.
100%. Now that I've seen it, like beforehand, I got the apprehension, but now it's like, oh no, but it's so tempting, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, once you've had one sweet, you want to put your hand back in the bag, you know.
The Kanye Uam is the more difficult one, but I would trust whatever decision they go with based on how fit he is and how he looks in training.
Yeah.
But he's coming in at a really difficult time. He hasn't got time to build himself back.
Imagine
if
they start him. That would be scenes.
But yeah, starting him probably feels like too big an ask, but him coming off the bench could be a statement.
And then maybe starting him in the semis if they win. Oh, it's interesting. Two names I want to quickly talk about as well in the Springbok pack. Oxenchain was outstanding. Scrum time. Absolutely ripped up. Really, really put his hand up. And Dion Fury, who of course bagged.
Yeah.
Got to try in the second half, I think, but was fantastic. Played both flanker and hooker in the same game. And all of the concerns about can he scrummage, can he throw into lineouts, and so on, he seems pretty keen to answer those critics.
Absolutely, yeah. Should we move on?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just trying to whiz through these as quickly as possible.
Definitely.
I feel like we're doing quite a good job of going deep without talking for too long. This is good. This is good.
Yes. We could have eulogised about Dion Free for like 5 minutes there.
Yeah. And we
don't need to hear it.
You don't need to hear it. You don't need to hear it. So, Japan against Samoa.
Yes.
Fun game. Good game. Felt very throwaway and lightweight.
Yes. I watched the first half of this in the rugby club just after getting hurt. Well, so I flew home from Lyon. I went to training and then I went home. So I had my my full suitcase and everything at training with me. And I watched the first half of that in the rugby club, then the second half at home. So this is one of the games where I was a little bit removed from it, because there was a lot of people saying, I thought you were in fucking France. Here you are. So yes, I'm going to ask you to lead on this one.
Well, yeah. So I watched it in the corner of a hotel. And it was, I thought, a perfectly entertaining game. It felt more like an autumn international or a kind of throwaway fun. It felt like a summer tour game. We were like, oh, that was a really fun, entertaining game. It was a build-up to, you know, seeing Ireland against the Springboks or something after that afternoon, rather than the big occasion on its own that evening. I thought, as a game, it was slightly throwaway. Weird atmosphere, I think, around Japan in particular, where I have no idea how good they are.
Yeah.
And I think we'll know this weekend when they play Argentina. But entertaining enough game, solid enough game. Samoa are exactly kind of the... Not what I don't know. I kind of had two feelings about Samoa, that they'd either be one way or the other, and they've landed somewhere exactly in the middle, right? You can tell this is the best Samoan team since that 2011 side that beat Australia and almost beat Wales and South Africa to get out of the group. However, they also still have the spirit of the last two Samoa teams in them from previous World Cups, where they are really indisciplined. They give away penalties at the worst moments and in the worst positions, which is the thing that costs them more than the actual count. I don't know what the penalty count was, but the positions and the times in which Samoa gave away the penalties is a really costly thing.
Mate, Jonathan Tomatoni's yellow card.
Oh, God. Which, right.
I've cringed a lot at how that guy's played this World Cup. Firstly, when he tried to throw that pass out the back to Ben Lam, I think it was, coming round on the blind side of that scrum. And it went horribly. Ben Lam, who, of course, also got sent off. And yeah, like Jonathan Tamatani will do like one thing exceptionally well and then back it up with two mistakes. And it's really frustrating.
I tweeted that Jonathan Tamatani is what would happen if you tried to teach a normal man in the street, or if you took a normal man in the street and you hypnotized him and told him he was Antoine Dupont.
Yeah.
Like, he is convinced he's the best player in the world, right? He is, in fact, a 6 out of 10 scrum half.
Yeah, right? He's not bad.
No, and if he played like a 6 out of 10 scrum half to his limitations and understood who he was, he would be a 7 or potentially even an 8 on a good day scrum half. But instead, he ends up being so much lower because he's convinced he's 1 in a million.
Yeah.
And his, like, being sure he's more talented than he is, and I don't... That sounds horrible, you know, but... Sometimes you've got to recognise what your skill set is. It's a really important part of being a halfback in particular. It's recognising where your limits are, what your skill set is, and playing to your skill set. He plays the skill set of a completely different player. Like, not just one better than himself, but like he thinks he's much bigger than he is. He thinks he's much quicker than he is. He's constantly trying to take on players in a way that is never going to work for him.
And
it's really frustrating to watch because he's a very good player who's just being like, just hamstringing himself with poor decision making every single time he gets the ball.
You texted me saying, if Jonathan Tamatani knew he was a 6 out of 10 player, he'd be an 8 out of 10 player.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely bang on. Like, that is completely my assessment of him.
And I just think he is holding... there's him and their discipline. You know, Samoa's penalty count was 12 in the end, which is only 2 more than Japan. But, like, the moments which are giving them out is so costly. And there's just, like, there's a few things holding this team back from really clicking. And I think in the next few years, Mapasu, I assume, is going to stay on because this is very much his dream job to be coach of the Samoa side. I think we can see them build from here.
Yeah.
And if they can find a couple of players in key positions, such as scrum half, and like I enjoy watching Tamatene, but like he's incredibly frustrating when you're wanting the team to be good.
Definitely.
He's a fun player to watch as a neutral.
Oh, mate,
if I was
pick
Samoa,
him in the
bar I'd be losing my mind.
I'd have him in the bar bars any day
brilliant.
Of the week.
Yeah. If I was a Samoa fan,
but
I'd be losing my mind with him.
Does he win test matches?
Exactly.
You know, I'm not sure.
Samoa haven't.
What I will add on Samoa... it's great that highlight reel Theo McFarland came out to play.
Yes.
Setting up, I think it was Pyatt Hour's try in the corner where he made the break and then went in at scrum half and gave the kind of like semi-dive pass. I love seeing that guy play, carrying the ball in one hand, really opening up. I think he was brilliant, especially in that first half. And I guess on the flip side of that, we're continually seeing... Michael Leitch is just still that good, isn't he?
Michael Leitch
it's
is
not
incredible.
Just his return to form. He's still that good.
He's got 4 more years in him.
Yeah.
He does not look like a man who's about to retire at the end of his rope.
He still looks quick.
He's like 34, 35 maybe?
Like, I know that try was disallowed that he set up for Matsushima, but like he looked quick there and looked agile and just... he knows how to attack. Like, he was playing as an edge forward a lot of the time in that game and didn't look like any slouch, which we thought he might have become. But no, he's just a big game player and obviously scored that try himself. Like, just outstanding.
I think the interesting thing about Japan, I sort of mentioned it previously, but is that their style of play has become outdated in trends in the game.
Yeah.
And no one is running massive long passages anymore. And as such, they also do this thing where they love to just chip away and build a scoreboard slowly.
Yeah.
And there's a few times in this game where they start to do that. And Matsuda was taking shots at goal. And, you know, he missed one in this game, his first miss of the tournament.
Yeah.
He was on 100% up until then. He's still, like, the third most accurate kick in the tournament after, you know, Ben Healy, the aforementioned. That is sort of working for them. But I also think there's a level of ambition that we've seen come in the last few years. You know, the Exeter Chiefs approach that they popularised it. And then Ireland took it really quickly and really took it to an extreme in going for the corner constantly, just keeping...
being extremely close and direct.
Yeah. Constantly, constantly being in the 22. And eventually the opposition will just fold.
Yeah.
You know, something will happen, something will change. And Japan, instead, are in the mode of 4 years ago, where the approach is you take every shot or point you have, rather than looking to apply pressure in the hope that eventually, you know, one of these straws you keep adding to Campbell's back will cause things to snap.
Here's the thing. That will come back into fashion, what Japan are doing.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I think you're right that you do want to go for the corner and wear the opposition down so they give away twice as many penalties 20 minutes later. You know.
So Japan are the team that's second most likely to kick on any given possession after Wales in this tournament.
They've kicked really well in this tournament.
Kicked well, and you can see that coming in, right? But that's been Jonathan Joseph's kind of...
Jonathan Joseph.
Yes, that's been the thing he's been enjoying watching. Jamie Joseph, on the other hand, it's been his kind of middle ground, is that they kick very regularly.
Yeah.
But they still play fundamentally with the same kind of style and approach. And so what they want to do when they look good is they keep the ball in hand for long periods.
Yeah.
And they just keep hold of it and they keep working and working and working. And it's, you know, a stat I mentioned, I think, on yesterday, is that 63-64% of tries in this tournament so far have come off first or second phase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, so you become less likely to score the lot more passages you have,
yeah,
which is the opposite of how it was last time. The more passages you went through, the more likely you were to break a defence
down.
Japan
are extremely creative with the way they kick as well.
Yeah.
You know, that they do go for a lot of shorter range kicks, probably knowing that Matsuda isn't Andre Pollard,
yeah,
you know, doesn't have that size of a boot on him, and knowing that they can manipulate defences more. The thing is, there's a lot of potential to the way that they play that.
Mm.
It's not quite come to life so far, but it's looking very good.
Yeah, 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 it's looking really sound.
Also, quickly before we move on, I just want to say, nothing says you dominate a game like all three of your back row have scored.
Yes, yeah.
How great is that for Japan?
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Himeno, God, I love him.
Unbelievable.
He is maybe my favourite player to watch. Just, yeah, like, as a, from a neutral point of view, he's maybe my favourite player. I just love him so much.
Labrys Skagne, fantastic as well. Like, yeah. I'm so glad to see him back.
But I think this Japan team probably should, Japan probably should have won by more. I think they're in control of the game enough, and yet they let Samoa come back into it to the point where when Leilani
scored,
didn't
get a bonus point,
did
they?
No. So they turned down the chance to go for the bonus point at the end, and they kicked a goal.
Yes.
And then shortly after, Leilani Fano scores, puts them back within seven, and there's a chance for Japan to pull away with that game, and they didn't take it. I just think there's a, the problem isn't that they aren't ruthless, it's that they're not attempting to get in positions where they can use that ruth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Whoever Ruth is, and pick, yeah, Ruth. But I get it, because ultimately a bonus point doesn't matter if you win enough games, you,
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
The prioritising 4 points is more important than, because they've got to just beat Argentina now, and they've put it in their own hands.
They also had the safety net that Argentina didn't get a bonus point against Samoa, so they, yeah, didn't have to.
Yeah. Know?
They knew what they had to do, and all that was come through this game with 4 points so that they can be in a position where if they beat Argentina, they're through and they'll play likely Wales in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And that is a game they'll go into knowing they can win.
Yeah.
They know they can put up a serious challenge there.
Definitely.
So, it's a really, really interesting one, Japan. Still not quite sure how good they are. I think their best game was still that first 60 minutes against England. I think they were good enough to have beaten most teams, but England are just so stubborn, and the way they play is so frustrating for a team that plays like Japan do.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of big nations that would have fallen over against that. I worry that their path is coming up against the teams that, whilst Argentina, Wales and England, likely Wales, aren't perhaps the strongest tier one nations, they're the teams that are the most frustrating for a team that plays like Japan.
Definitely.
And I worry that, you know, if they played Scotland, I think there's a chance they could have beaten them again, who are a better team than those, but just playing a more open style and are more willing to kind of give themselves over to the way Japan play.
Sure.
So it's kind of frustrating, but I'd love to see Japan really put it on against Argentina, which would be great.
Just it's
be
hard good to quantify just how good they are at the moment.
Yeah.
Japan,
and it'd be great for them to back up what they did in 2019.
Yeah, exactly.
In the same way Argentina themselves did.
You can't help but cheer for them. Yeah. You know, and like hats off to Samoa, because I think they were really, really good in this game. But
the vibe I get off this Japan, right, is it's very similar to Argentina themselves in 2011. Right, well, they'd had the big World Cup the year before in 2007.
Yeah,
and they'd come through. They'd done incredibly well.
They have to back it up now.
Yeah. And it all came down. They did well enough. They had a frustrating game against England that all fell apart. And they should have won. They could have won, but they didn't. Instead, yeah, things went against them. And they just gave up and it all fell apart.
Yep.
And then seems it familiar. All came down to the final game, which was against the team who they were pretty evenly matched with in, you know, Scotland in for Argentina in 2011.
Yeah.
Argentina themselves here in 2023. And it all came down to that one game. And I think there's a chance we see an Amorosino moment.
I was going to say, and it's going to be Contepomi flying offside, you know. Yeah. To win the game.
I know, obviously, the Ireland-Scotland game is the big one this weekend. Argentina-Japan is the one I'm most excited about.
There's two big ones for me.
Like, that is the game I'm most excited about this weekend. I think we're in for an absolute cracker.
It's a bonus quarterfinal.
Yeah.
We get the round of 16 game.
Yeah.
We get the bonus knockout, and I'm so excited for that. Cause it's a straight shootout, and both teams know that it's knockout rugby. Let us come a week early, and I love that.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. Ooh, so, we're churning through these. Let's do Argentina-Chile.
I was going to suggest that one.
Yeah.
You were at the game. I, of course, was not.
Mate.
I, again, this was the other game that I kind of I was watching it, but a little bit less so because I was also watching the World's Women's Game on at the same time. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, absolutely great fun. Great occasion. Right down to Nico Sanchez winning 100th cap, obviously, at the start.
Yes.
Hell of a servant he's been. Him doing the little, look up to the star for his sister, which is incredibly moving.
Yeah.
He obviously passed away right before that game against New Zealand, where he was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he plays his best, I think, when he's emotional. Mm. And you saw
him.
Yeah.
He was really good in this game.
This was a match that, on paper, should have just been a routine win for Argentina, right? And Chile were obviously going to be dead up for it at all times, but Sanchez was just a cut above. He was at his absolute best. And again, showed why Argentina needed a bloody fly half.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I obviously was cheering for Chile in this game. I obviously wanted Chile to win because I love the underdog and I love Chile generally.
Yeah.
But I could definitely excuse Nico Sanchez, age 51, running in a try, which was like Rodrigo Fernandez-esque with the dummy and everything, which was brilliant. It was a great way to open the try scoring. And not only that, but also Agustin Creevy getting a try,
yes,
you know, where he drove over. That was fantastic. Creevy also, I just think, generally played really well in this game in a way that I didn't realise he could anymore.
Against, you know, like, he first played Chile in 2005.
That's mad.
You know, like, it's been that long. He's gone so long that he's won 100 caps and come around to see them qualify for a World Cup.
Yeah.
It's been mad. Though I thought Argentina were a lot of fun. They overcame some of the periods where they were really frustrated well, and they look solid. If they pick Sanchez, I would fancy them to beat Japan. If they don't, I think it's a real opening for Japan. I think... I don't know if Michael Checker... No, okay, no. I think Michael Checker does know what he wants from this team, and I don't know if that's what's best for this team.
Sure.
And I don't know if some of the players are starting to question whether Michael Checker is a bit stubborn in the same way Australia's players did in 2019.
Yeah, which it's an inevitability with all Michael Checker teams that happens, you know, that there's only so many bullets he can fire, and you do start to wonder if that has started to become the case.
Yeah.
But they pulled through this. They were exceptional. They were a lot of fun in the process. Luckily, people will know by the time this comes out whether Sanchez is starting in that game.
Rodriguez Igoro, very good on the wing as well.
He's a lot of fun, isn't he? He's, again, like, they've been producing the likes of, you know, Delgi recently and Mateo Carreras and so on, who are really, really fun wingers. And Igoro similarly came through a sevens background, similarly to Delgi. And has just lit it up. I just think he's been really, really good. Got great feet, can really finish, runs great support lines. I've got a lot of time for his grow.
Yeah, and squeezed into this squad after playing for Argentina 15, where he scored a try against Chile for Argentina 15, their second 15, earlier this year. Squeezed through playing really well into there, into the squad, and really has taken his chance, I think. Was really, really good here. And... yeah, was fantastic, and I hope we see more of him in a full-on Puma shirt, because I enjoyed watching him a lot, and I hope we get to see him, you know, play potentially top 14 Premiership rugby.
How old do you say he is?
He's 24.
Oh, yeah, he's got time.
Yeah, floating around in the kind of Argentina system for a while. Came through the under-20s in 2019, and has been kind of floating around somewhere. He's still playing, like, local rugby in Argentina. So hopefully he picks up a contract somewhere, because he's been very good.
Yeah, I'm a fan. He'll go down a storm in the top 14.
Absolutely.
Like, Stade Francais will be all over him.
So I think we should move on to the really important guys.
Yeah?
Chile.
So this was their last game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is them done.
Yeah, which is a shame. And look, I'm sure we'll cover them in more depth in another episode of this, or some kind of content around them, because there's a lot to be said about them.
Absolutely.
I will miss them.
Yep.
But in terms of the moments that went well for them, I don't know, like, I'm a big fan of Inaki Ayatsa at fullback. I think he's chaotic.
He had a really difficult first half.
Yeah.
Because, and you probably couldn't pick this up on TV, the sun was straight in his eyes.
No, that was glaring on TV, where he was having to, like, shield his eyes when catching high balls and stuff.
So we were sat, like, with our backs to that, so we were looking directly into it. Mm. And the stadium, it's really cool, you know, obviously we'll be there tomorrow for Where's Georgia. But really cool, really interesting little stadium. But, like, has quite a thin kind of ridge around it. So the sun gets in really easily and covers half the pitch, like, completely. And yet, like, you couldn't see anything when you turned and looked that way, even from outside the stadium. So him looking up and having that big, you know, open roof was, really difficult for him.
I think it's bad when that does come through on telly.
Yeah,
you know. I want to quickly. So when we do the retrospective podcast, we have a Dick of the Day segment. Mm. However, I would like to reverse that and give out a hero of the day.
Please.
To referee Paul Williams, who really wanted Chile to score a try. And just constantly, every time Joy Neville... Was it Joy Neville?
No, Ben Whitehouse.
Ben Shitehouse was in his ear going, oh no, it's actually not a try. And he was like, yeah, but... Are you sure about that, Ben? Remember what we were talking about earlier? And then Ben Whitehouse would go, no, I don't remember what we were talking about earlier. It's not a try. He clearly knocks it on. And then he would go, no. But
the Bome try being disallowed was the biggest load of bullshit in the world. I don't give a shit if it's the correct decision. Yeah. It's morally wrong.
It's morally
it's
wrong.
Morally wrong.
It just opposes good vibes.
Yeah. It was the biggest anti-rugby decision anyone's made. The crowd all lost their shit. Yeah. It was the biggest cheer I think I've had in any
game. How dare you take that away from
them? So far, was, you know, Chile getting a try against a tier one team for the first time since 1950s.
That's like, mental.
Enormous.
And they deserved
it
as well.
Yeah.
Like they had, they didn't have that many opportunities in the opposition 22, but every time they did something creative with
yeah.
it. And they clearly had the ambition to go for those, and it was great, and I'm so glad that they eventually did score.
Yeah.
Through Thomas Dussilliant, who I've just pronounced in a French accent
yeah.
for some reason. But it was just incredible scenes when they were like, you're not going to disallow it this time, are you? And then Paul Williams was like, no, I don't have a TMO, having like cut his earpiece open.
Oh, I mean, no, you were terrified he was going to do it again. Especially yeah. after, you know, it happened with them against England, happened with Namibia, against France. The amount of tier two tries have just been chalked off by bullshit TMOs when they won't step in for the other tries, being similarly forward passes. Really, really annoying. Really, really frustrating and ruins games as spectacle. It's just utter, utter bullshit. And Ben Whitehouse, dick of the day.
Yeah.
Easy dick
Coward.
Of the day.
Coward. But, I mean, look, we don't want to talk about refereeing, no. and we will not talk about refereeing, except in this case, because it's funny when the score's 59-8, for that to be the one time that you talk about it, because Chile was robbed.
Yep. I think we saw a lot of that Chile team running quite low on the ground. They put a lot into opening game against Japan, and they were phenomenal.
Yeah.
They put an awful lot into the game against Samoa, and they ran out of steam by half time, I think.
Yeah.
And then against England, likewise, for 20 odd minutes, they were brilliant and they were on it. And this game was a bit more even, and they kept the score a bit lower. You were hoping they kept about 40, because that would have been a real achievement
yeah.
if they keep below 40.
The things like Argentina had periods of 5 or 10 minutes, they'd have spells where they just got like 3 tries on the bounce,
yeah.
was the thing. And they'd then start to pull away. But there were large parts of that game where Chile made a great account for themselves.
Yeah, well, you had the 64-68 scored a couple of tries, and then again in the last 3 minutes they scored quite yeah. you know, a bunch of tries together. And if they could have just held out a couple of times, Chile did have, for the first time though, the end of the first half is the only time in this World Cup they've gone to half time without conceding a try. They've gone to half about every other half for them in this World Cup has ended by conceding a try.
That's pretty outstanding. Just yeah. in the red period
yep.
of the clock,
they conceded. So they held it out once.
Well done, lads. Well done, lads. You've got to start somewhere.
Look, you saw them running slightly on energy, but I thought they were still a lot of fun.
In the next World Cup, they're going to
do it twice. They did was huge, and I'm just really excited where the team can go and build. And like, I got pulled aside to do they're doing a documentary on the Chile team, and they pulled me aside to like ask a few questions about it.
Oh,
as someone
sweet.
That's like championed them a bit, which is lovely. And they asked if I've got a message for the team, and the thing I just said was like, this is just the start.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to look back on this in a few decades' time and go, wow, like, that first World Cup we played in, we were nowhere, and, like, we just gave it our best lash, and look where we were, right? The phenomenal thing about Chile in this World Cup, right? So they lost 71-0 to England, and they lost 59-5 to Argentina,
yeah.
right? You go back
59-8, I don't know why I said that.
You go back 4 years to 2019, right? They lost, I think it was 58-5 against, so a very similar scoreline against Canada.
Yeah, who were shit and
yeah,
were shit.
They lost 73-0 against the USA. Really similar scorelines to their games against Argentina and England. Look at the calibre they're stepping up
they
to.
They weren't a rugby country
no.
at that point. Yeah, as you say, in 4 years, they might have that scoreline come against them, against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Or against South Africa. But, and that's fine. Or this, you know, a peak France team.
They were going from losing by these margins to the bottom-ranked teams in the World Cup, right, to now against the middle-ranked teams in the World Cup.
Yeah.
To, like, the worst tier middle, one. Yeah, say. Like, quarter-finalists. Quarter-finalists. We're looking at two quarter-finalists.
Yeah.
Two of the top eight, right, teams are now losing by their scorelines too. In 4 years' time, where can they be?
Yeah.
You know, if they can get to a point where, like, they went from losing by 70 and 50 points, the USA and Canada, to beating both of them inside 3 years.
Mate, Chile have completed a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
How mad is that as a sentence?
But, like, if they can improve that much in 3 years, how far can they go? Right. Yeah. And, like, yeah, they went from losing by 70 to beating the USA in 3 years. That's probably a step too far to see them beating Argentina, yes, and England in 3 years. But if they can get to a point where they're denying them bonus points, or they're competing, in the way we've seen Uruguay doing in this World Cup, right? Where, like, yes, they fell apart against the All Blacks, but they really competed with Italy and France for full games and managed to deny France a bonus point. Like, they can be at that level potentially in 4 years in the way it's taking Uruguay eight.
Yeah, and it could be the point that, you know, because Japan started to pull away in the around 60th minute of that game, and that could maybe be 75th.
Yeah.
In 4 years' time.
Yeah.
You know, they competed for 20 minutes against England. That could be 40 in 4 years' time.
They've never played at this level. No. You know, they've now played two games against Tier 1 nations in 70 years.
Yeah.
Like, and they came in consecutive weeks, and they got better between those two games. Like, they were much better in this game than they were against England, and they were brilliant for 20 minutes against England and fell apart completely. But, I don't know, just their ceiling is so high, they're such a promising team, they're so young.
And Pablo Lemoyne's sticking around?
Pablo Lemoyne said after this game, and there's the biggest news come out of this from a Chile point of view, he's sticking around for another 4 years.
Yeah.
He apparently the contract is decided and it's to be kind of signed and finalised in the coming days after the World Cup.
But he's said that publicly. He's comfortable in that information.
Yeah.
And that is great news. He's the best man for the job. He's doing a brilliant job.
The other interesting thing, though, is his assistant coach, whose name I have forgotten. But have written down somewhere.
Okay.
Find it. Who has been his right hand man with Uruguay, with Germany, and now with Chile, is leaving, likely after this World Cup, to go to Brazil to be their head coach.
Yes.
With the intention being, he is Lemoyne light, he is the second best at this job, he knows this second best of Lemoyne himself, he's obviously staying with Chile, to try and do the same thing with Brazil. And now they've got a 2014 World Cup, likely looking like it's being expanded to have four more teams for the following World Cup. We're suddenly in a situation where they're targeting that. They're
bring going on Brazil.
Being, yeah, like, the fourth South American team in this World Cup.
The thing is, you occasionally see clips that go viral of, like, the Brazilian porno scrum, which was incredible, where they were just pulverising everybody in the South American Championship at scrum time. And you see clips of the Brazilian sevens team going viral. And, like, they have lightning-fast wingers and footballers who converted and so on. And, look, I'm not going to say I know too much about the current Brazilian team, but they've beaten the USA in past. They've beaten Chile in past.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, they have potential to be the next team that can make that step up. It's happened with Uruguay. It's happened with Chile. And I also can't remember the name of this fella who's Lemoyne's right-hand man. But it's about time he had that solo career, because he's been in successful environments. And he knows how to take somebody from being a middling rugby nation to somebody who can genuinely compete on the world stage. And that is super, super exciting. Bring on Brazil. And also, like, with Uruguay, the interesting point you make is rugby was, what, the seventh or eighth biggest sport in Uruguay? And it's now second.
Yeah, it's gone from, I think, eighth to second in 10 years.
Because they've been so realistic about the competition with other sports, especially football being massive in Uruguay. When you think of Brazil and you think of sports, the first thing you think of is football. Football is, like, everything over there, as far as I'm aware. Like, they absolutely love their football. They're never going to compete with that.
No.
But they could go for a similar story to Uruguay.
Exactly. That's the target, is they can build there.
The sports market's massive over there.
Yeah, exactly. And so much of it has just been eaten by football, right?
Yeah.
And that means other sports are struggling for scraps. With Uruguay, we've seen it explode, and just they now hold the majority in that. To the point that the Minister of Sports, like, increasing the funding to rugby, because that is now the second most popular sport in the country.
Yeah.
Right?
It's captured the hearts, man.
Yeah. And
I mean, Portugal as well, we're seeing happen.
Yeah. You know. It's grown enormously in Chile. It's jumped from, like, 18th most popular sport to being in the top 10 now in terms of people watching. We don't know the viewing figures for Chile in this World Cup, but I'd be fascinated to see them. Likewise for Portugal. It's just exploding. It's exploding. It's such an area for growth. We've talked about this on all the podcasts on South American teams, but we need to be investing heavily in them. Currently, World Rugby's, their funding towards Tier 2 nations, 50% of it's going to Pacific Islands, right? We need to be putting a huge, huge amount to South America, because we have potential for not just three teams who can compete with them.
You'll make that money back.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. we're looking in a decade at potentially having like 6 or 7 South American teams who can qualify for a World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking having it similar to Europe, where you've got a massive hotbed of teams who can qualify. Where, you know, you've got, what is it, 9 European teams in this tournament. There's a world in which we're looking at 7 or 8 South American nations can make it. If you include the whole Americas, you could potentially fill a current World Cup with European and American teams.
Yeah. It's the only area that I'm looking at in men's rugby and I feel positive about.
Yeah.
Like, this is where the growth of the game is. This is genuinely, yeah. this could take over. Yeah.
So, I think on that note, I think we'll leave it here for now.
Okay.
And we can pick up a couple of the other games afterwards. Yeah, so we'll come back to New Zealand, Italy, Fiji, Georgia. I think a game's where there's a lot to talk about. I think we'll do that on a shorter one afterwards. We'll cover them. We've whizzed through a bunch of the games just there. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you had a lovely time. And there's plenty more rugby to come. We're just trying to keep catching up on all of these games and covering them all. So if you have had a nice time, then please continue having a nice time. And otherwise, we'll see you soon for... Is it rugby we're talking about?
I think it's rugby.
Rugby.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.